Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening. I hope you did okay with the snow and everybody you love is safe and sound. We should not be seeing more of this until around Sunday, if at all then. Other than that, weather people are predicting pretty much sunny and partly cloudy skies with temperatures mostly in the single digits and in the teens for the next few days, with nights getting bitterly cold. It's January, the beginning of the year, which brings a whole new group of interns to KHOI, something well-loved around here at the station. Our engineer here for Local Talk is one of those interns, Jackie Norman. Jackie, can I introduce you to the Local Talk audience?
Yeah, sure.
Well, welcome to KHOI and welcome to Local Talk. You've been engineering now for about 2 months, right? You've been in engineering and training?
Yeah.
And you've been on your own now for how long?
I think I took over at the beginning of December, I think it was.
Do you enjoy engineering?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, it's great to have you. Thanks. You engineer two to two mornings a week.
Yep, Wednesdays and Fridays.
Wednesdays and Fridays. You're an Iowa State student?
Yes, I'm a junior.
Where at Iowa State are you studying?
I'm studying at the Greenlee School, focusing on broadcast journalism with a minor in history and women's and gender studies.
When you talk about broadcast journalism, are you thinking radio or TV or internet in your future? What do you see?
I'm not exactly sure yet. That's kind of why I decided to intern here, to kind of see what radio was all about, because it's always something that's interested me, because it's something you hear all the times. You just grow up on it. So I kind of figured I'd find out what it was like here. I'm not exactly sure yet, but I've definitely been enjoying my time here so far. So it's definitely an option for me.
Something that's enjoyable for you.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
I mean, I think it'll help me in the future as well. So,
and you'll be doing other things here at KHOI besides engineering. You're going to be making videos?
Yeah. Some radio personalities to kind of get to know some of the hosts that are on KHOI. As well as some of the Pantorium concerts that we host at least once a month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you'll be building up the YouTube channel for KHOI?
Yeah.
You'll also be working a little bit on our website as well, right?
Yeah, putting on interviews so people can check them out.
Well, looking forward to working with you. Where are you from, Jackie?
I'm originally from Cedar Falls, Iowa, so not too far.
And how long have you been in Ames?
I've been coming here ever since freshman year, so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for coming to KHOI. What motivated you to come downtown here to the radio station?
The KHOI booth was at the internship fair on campus, and I got to talk with Becca and Aaron, and it just sounded really interesting to me just hearing them talk about it, so I figured I'd try it out.
So is engineering hard?
It can be. Most of the time it's really fun, but sometimes you run into issues, and it's just a matter of trying to figure out how to get the board to work with what's going on.
A lot of it is knowing how to move and what to do next, right? How to prioritize your movements so that it syncs up with what the audio.
Exactly. And you always have to be like prepared for the next step. Otherwise, you'll fall behind and mess something up.
Well, we really appreciate you being an intern who's willing to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and come down here. Thank you for doing that.
No problem.
Okay. Well, pull back the curtain for a minute. That's Jackie Norman, who is making it possible for you to hear this radio show. She's our latest intern. Well, thank you. And you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. And it is Friday. So here is Dennis Hart, KHOI Civic Reporter, with a summary of the week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related papers.
Big news dominated the front pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers this week. We begin with Tuesday's Tribune, which reported that the Ames School Board needed only a few minutes on Monday night, 6 to be exact, to unanimously approve language for a bond referendum needed to finance building a new Ames High School. Board members voted in favor of the school district authorizing the issuance of $110 million in general obligation bonds to build a new high school and to construct additions at the Meeker, Mitchell, and Edwards Elementary School buildings. And after numerous work sessions and board meetings in recent months, it was decided the construction of a new $14 to $15 million high school pool will not be included in the bond language and will instead be paid for through 1 cent sales tax dollars. The elementary schools were added to the high school project because enrollment in the district has increased over the past year, with more than 200 new students now attending Ames schools. Leading up to Monday's meeting, the tentative board language allowed for $105 million in general obligation bonds for the new high school and elementary school additions. But the number was increased by $5 million to ensure that a funding shortage does not take place in the middle of construction. The language chosen Monday night will now be placed on a petition for the high school project. That petition requires 935 signatures to be collected for the bond referendum to be placed on a ballot. The number of signatures must equal 25% of the ballot submitted in the most recent school election, which took place last September. Petitions were expected to be printed by the end of this week. Volunteers will stand outside Ames schools mornings and afternoons, with the goal being to collect up to 1,200 signatures to make sure enough are valid. Anyone who lives within the Ames School District and is at least 18 years old will be able to sign the petition. The district has until February 15th to gather the needed signatures and submit them to the county auditor for the bond referendum to be placed on the ballot April 3rd. 60% of voters must approve the bond issue for it to be passed. The school board has awarded the high school construction management contract to Story Construction. Also Monday night, the school board heard from three search firms hoping to be chosen to lead the search for a new Ames School District superintendent. Tim Taylor has announced he plans to retire at the end of this school year. By the end of Monday evening's meeting, the board had reached consensus that either Ray and Associates of Cedar Rapids or McPherson and Jacobson of Omaha were the right direction for the district to take. The board agreed that more time is needed to evaluate the pros and cons of both firms before a final decision can be made. A decision could be finalized during a board work session next week. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, word that sectors of Story County employees are looking for wage hikes as the bargaining process with the Board of Supervisors is set to start. At its meeting last week, the supervisors received the initial offers from the employee union, which is the Public Professional and Maintenance Employees Local 2003. The supervisors will present their counteroffer on Friday, and then negotiations will begin. Those negotiations will come almost 1 year after the state legislature approved an overhaul of the state's collective bargaining rules. The new law, in part, restricts negotiations to base wages for many public employees. Story County employees, including administrative workers and workers in the Secondary Roads Department and the Conservation Department, would like to have a 4% hike in wages. Those in the Story County Sheriff's Office would like a 6% hike. Also in Tuesday's Ames Tribune, word that the arraignment for the Nevada man accused of assaulting a woman at his home on Christmas Day has been set for next Tuesday, January 16th. 30-year-old Johan Enrique Acevedo Perez is charged with willful injury, felony assault, and more. Authorities allege he punched a woman in the face before she called 911, and that while she was on the phone with 911 operators, he knocked the phone out of her hand and punched her in the head. She was able to escape and run outside the apartment building. Also Tuesday, the Tribune reported that the trial for the Ames man accused of pharmacy burglaries in both Ames and Nevada has been delayed until February 27th. 26-year-old Austin Kyle Brinks was arrested last October and charged with third-degree burglary, second-degree criminal mischief, and more. Authorities said he entered a Nevada pharmacy and stole prescription drugs after two incidents at an Ames pharmacy. One more note from Tuesday's Trib, word that Freddy's Frozen Custard and Steak Burgers was set to open in Campustown on Thursday as the final tenant of the Kingland Building's ground floor. The restaurant has been in the works since last August. It will be the fifth Freddy's in Iowa. Two others are in Cedar Rapids, one is in Waterloo, and one in Council Bluffs. This past year, a number of restaurants have opened in Campustown. In Wednesday's Ames Trib, word that the City Council approved major changes to Ames's rental occupancy rules on Tuesday night. The Council adopted regulations that limit bedrooms and parking and replaced the city's old ordinance, which elapsed January 1st. The overhaul was months in the making after the state legislature passed a law last year that said cities could no longer regulate rental occupancy based on familial status. Ames's previous ordinance did just that, and the state nullified it on New Year's Day. The new ordinance restricts occupancy in single-family and duplex rental properties based on the number of bedrooms in the home. Up to three adults can live in one, two, or three-bedroom homes, while four- and five-bedroom homes can hold one adult per bedroom in the house. So a four-bedroom home could hold up to four people. The overall cap for rental properties is five adults. The number of bedrooms in a home registered in the city as of January 1st will be determined by either the number on file with the city assessor or the number in the records of the city's inspection division, whichever is higher. The inspections division will establish the official number of bedrooms for homes that are registered in the new year. Parking is the other main aspect of the new ordinance. For maximum occupancy in the home, one, two, and three-bedroom homes must have at least two off-street parking spots. Properties with four or more bedrooms will need to have one off-street parking spot per bedroom to allow for full occupancy. So, for example, if a four-bedroom house has only three off-street parking spots, only three adults can live there. Property owners and landlords can add more parking spots to their properties to allow their homes to be fully occupied starting May 1st. The new ordinance was adopted on a 5-1 vote. Councilmember Amber Corrieri dissented. This is the second major action the council has taken in recent months regarding rental occupancy. Earlier, the council approved a six-month moratorium on the city's issuance of rental permits in neighborhoods close to Iowa State. That one expires April 30th. Mayor John Hala said the new ordinance could not take care of every issue and said the council will use its February 20th work session to focus on the rental occupancy question even more. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, former Story County Supervisor Wayne Clinton returned to his old stomping grounds Tuesday, coming back to talk to current board members. Clinton delivered a 12-minute statement in which he said that certain things have come to light in the past year and that he could no longer sit back. Clinton told the supervisors that, in his words, what's happened in the past is in the past. It should remain that way. We should, he continued, look forward to the future not only in building better working relationships with each other, but amongst the staff. Over the past months, as the Tribune has reported, there has been no shortage of tense meetings at the board. The three supervisors have engaged in recurring disagreements, most often centered on the actions of Supervisor Loris Olson and whether she has overstepped her role as supervisor. Just last week, the board voted to request that she follow County Attorney Jessica Reynolds' advice to only meet one-on-one with county employees if a witness is present. Board Chair Rick Sanders put the blame on the board's current situation on Olson, saying, in his words, the door is always open and that he would help her any way he could. The board discussed 9 so-called operating principles that Olson proposed, talking about them one by one, but did not vote to adopt any of them. In other news in Wednesday's Trib, the State Board of Regents has approved sabbatical requests for 43 Iowa State faculty members for fiscal year 2019. Those requests are expected to cost about $116,000. ISU's request for the faculty members to be granted an opportunity to spend time researching, grant writing, and pursuing learning opportunities is the highest amount over the past 4 years. The $116,000 price tag reflects replacing professors in the classroom, as well as adjusting courses while faculty members are on sabbatical. Also Wednesday, the Tribune reported on Governor Kim Reynolds' first condition of the state address that she made Tuesday. The governor offered a vision of an Iowa which is, in her words, overflowing with opportunity, while she also called for an end to what she called the destructive force of sexual harassment. Reynolds said Iowa's condition was strong because, again in her words, our ability to dream is infinite and the will of our people is great. She laid out an agenda for tax reform that includes ending federal deductibility, an initiative to expand broadband access in rural Iowa, expanding mental health services, and combating the growing problems of opioid abuse. The governor's budget priorities also include cutting nearly $2 million from Iowa State University's appropriation and maintaining the property tax backfill. That backfill is meant to cover lost revenue by municipalities after the state legislature cut property taxes 5 years ago. The city of Ames would reportedly be eligible for $1 million of that money. Also in Wednesday's Trib, a feature story about Ames native Nicholas Bertelson, who has produced several feature films and a Netflix original movie. All this since his days at Ames High, where he played in the concert band, marching band, and pep band. He graduated from high school more than 2 decades ago, then got a degree in electronic media studies from Iowa State in 1997. Eventually, he wound up at the University of Southern California, where he graduated in 2011, and he's gone on to make numerous feature films, including Yosemite and The Labyrinth. You can read more about this Ames native in Wednesday's Ames Tribune. In Thursday's Trib, a report on an opioid town meeting that took place Wednesday night at the Ames City Council chambers. More than 100 people turned out to hear a panel of local law enforcement, doctors, and mental health professionals talk about the opioid epidemic that has spread across the country. Most of the panel members said the crisis has not yet hit Story County in full force. Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald said, in his words, "We don't have a tremendous problem at this point, but we're just watching a few counties away in eastern Iowa, and it is impacting there." Ames Police Commander Jeff Huff said, toward the end of last year, the prescription drugs that were surrendered to the police department's drop box were illegal, and that, he said, was a positive because people were recognizing how dangerous the drugs could be in the wrong hands. Last year, about 65,000 opioid-related deaths occurred in the United States. Also Thursday, the Trib reported that the Ames City Council has decided not to enter an agreement with a local developer to proceed on an affordable housing project at the old Ames Middle School site. City staff had drafted the agreement with J-Corps for the development at 321 State Avenue. It had included a minimum of 20 homes for low and moderate income families and 17 houses that could be sold at the market rate. The city would have provided the land, some construction money, and financial assistance for first-time homebuyers. But developer Dwayne Jensen from J-Corps told the council he wanted the city to include some kind of sunset clause in the agreement that would let J-Corps leave the project after a number of years free of debt. He said he did not want the company to find itself at the mercy of when a house could be built and bought. Councilmember Gloria Betcher said she worried that the city would not be able to find qualified homebuyers within a 3-year timeline. The council voted 5-1 against entering the agreement with J-Corps. Also in Thursday's Tribune, a Polk County judge is considering options after a hearing Wednesday to determine whether a lawsuit filed against the state of Iowa and a former Iowa State University official should be dismissed. The Iowa State student alleges that she was raped by a former friend 4 years ago and that the resulting investigation was mishandled. A motion to dismiss the case was filed at the end of November, and the judge heard arguments both in favor and against dismissal on Wednesday. Also in Thursday's Trib, details about the 32nd annual celebration in honor of the life of Martin Luther King Jr. The event will take place Monday night at the Ames Middle School, starting at 6 p.m. There will be a social time, a birthday cake, music, speeches by political leaders, and a program featuring a variety of community groups. And Thursday Trib also had details about the Iowa First Lego League State Championships, which will take place Saturday and Sunday at Iowa State's College of Engineering. 60 teams of 9 to 14-year-olds will take part, and the students will be showing how robots can help solve the world's water problems. In this week's Nevada Journal, word that the city council appointed Jason Sampson to fill the vacancy in the at-large position on Monday. Sampson was a candidate in the November city elections. He was chosen by a three-member committee to sift through the applications of five people who sought the position. Sampson will fill the vacancy created by Brett Barker's election as mayor. At the same council meeting, Fire Chief Ray Reynolds said he's working with DuPont to bring the company's plant to a safe state before DuPont leaves the community in April. Also in this week's journal, Nevada school board members presented the board's goals for the 2018-2019 year during Monday's board meeting. One goal is to focus on student achievement by continuing to build on innovative teaching methods. Another goal is to implement a new five-year plan, which includes a baseball field, and exploring the beginning steps for middle school renovations. The board's remaining goals are to strengthen partnerships and cost sharing with neighboring districts and to maintain its finances. In this week's Boone News Republican, word that the Boone City Council allocated $145,000 in hotel-motel tax funds to local special projects and local groups during its Monday meeting. Among those who received money, the Boone County Convention and Visitors Bureau, which was awarded $70,000, and Boone County Economic Development, which received $35,000. The Boone County Historical Society had asked for $15,000, but it was not awarded any money for the time being. One councilman said he was not comfortable awarding the society any money until a decision about the future of the Mamie Dowd Eisenhower Birthplace is reached with the Mamie Dowd Eisenhower Birthplace Foundation. Also in this week's News Republican, word that the Boone County Endowment Board will hold an informational meeting at noon next Thursday at the ISU Extension and Research Office on Marshall Street in Boone. Last year, 32 Boone County organizations were awarded nearly $150,000 in grant money from the Endowment Fund. Among the projects receiving money were building improvements for the Madrid Historical Center, outdoor play equipment for Child Care Junction, and new signage welcoming people to Ogden. In this week's Story City Herald, City Administrator Mark Jackson said a couple of major projects are scheduled for this year. The wastewater treatment plant is nearly 30 years old and has many items that need to be replaced or upgraded. Jackson said the wastewater capital improvement plan has identified about $2.5 million worth of needed improvements, and this year the city plans to spend about $1.5 million on upgrades. In addition, the city plans to complete the second phase of upgrades to North Park, which includes the restoration of the stream bank and replacement of pedestrian bridges at a cost of about $325,000. Also in this week's Herald, the 19th annual Rosy Cheeks Fun Run and Walk will take place in Story City on Saturday, February 4th. Between 100 and 140 runners usually take part in the race, which is sponsored by the Parks and Recreation Department. The Rosy Cheeks Run was one of the first winter runs in Central Iowa. It starts at the fire station. And one more quick note from the Herald, a reminder about Story City's snow ordinance and parking laws. You can read all about it in this week's newspaper. And that's your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm Dennis Hart, wishing you a happy and safe weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, KHOI Civic Reporter. And this was taken from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related area papers. And you can find more news at amestrib.com. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Martin Luther King Jr. Day will be next Monday, and on this day, many people and various groups perform volunteer services locally to demonstrate and live out the vision of a better world that was espoused by the Reverend King. Next Monday, one such group will be the Heart of Iowa chapter of Democratic Socialists of America, and they're going to be performing a somewhat unexpected service. Welcome to Local Talk, Tom Brandsegg.
Thanks for having me.
Tom, you are with the Heart of Iowa chapter of Democratic Socialists of America. Tell us what this group is going to be doing on MLK Day.
We're going to be changing brake lights for the members of the community. Bring your car and we'll change your brake light.
So these are car brake lights.
Yes.
And where are you going to be doing this?
At the East Parking Deck on the ISU campus. It's 500 Wallace Road.
Okay. And explain where Wallace Road is.
Across the street from the Greenlee School of Journalism on ISU campus.
Which is Hamilton Hall?
Yep.
Kind of head into campus from 6th Street. There's like a parking area.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll be...
He's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we'll be easy to find. We'll have tables set up and there will be red banners and stuff, so...
By the side of the road?
Well, in the parking lot.
Uh-huh. So if you drive on Wallace Road, you'll see where you guys are?
Yep, we'll have people holding signs to direct you and stuff.
Do people really have braking lights that are missing?
Well, this is actually a program that was started by a DSA chapter in New Orleans. They did a similar project where they changed brake lights for free in their community, and it was so successful that other chapters around the nation did similar programs. I can think of one in Tallahassee, Florida, one in Chattanooga, and one in Minneapolis. And so this is a bit of an experiment to see how this goes on a smaller scale in Ames, but we figure that whatever good we can do with this is going to be a net positive for the community.
It's a little bit of a signature activity of the Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah, it's become a way for us to do something for the community and to also protect immigrants and people of color and marginalized groups from unnecessary interactions with police, from getting pulled over for a broken taillight.
Well, okay, so why don't you explain who the Democratic Socialists of America are and how this kind of signature project fits into the mission of your organization?
Sure. Democratic Socialists of America, DSA, we're a political organization that was founded in 1982. We are not a political party. A lot of our members are Democrats, some are independents, some are Greens, some are in smaller third parties.
Do you have any Republicans?
Not that I know of, but mm-hmm. if a Republican wanted to join, they'd be welcome.
Mm-hmm.
But we work outside of the political party structure just to promote socialist values and socialism both nationally and locally through this chapter level work. Our chapter covers the five counties around Ames, Story, Marshall, Boone, Hamilton, Hardin. We have sister chapters just in Iowa, in Des Moines, in the Quad Cities, in Cedar Rapids, in Iowa City, and in Dubuque.
You're not creating your own political party. So what is the purpose of the Democratic Socialists of America?
Our mission is to fight for specific issues that we feel are important to establishing socialism. So a big national issue that DSA is fighting for now is Medicare for All, which has since become a national issue, not just for us as DSA, but, you know, it's been picked up by the Democratic Party. There are other local issues that we work on. For instance, one of our members is starting a tenants union for Ames, and then public service projects like this to kind of build community solidarity among people that are affected by capitalism and who are those kind of left out in the cold by capitalism.
Is your goal to raise these issues in the context of election politics or to change policy on a local level, or where do you direct your focus?
Well, right now, I think it's more for us for policy on a local level, but that really varies chapter to chapter. We don't get really any marching orders on how to do that. We decide for ourselves how we want to focus our efforts. Some chapters are very heavily into electoral politics. For instance, a guy named Lee Carter that was just elected to the Virginia State Legislature is a member of his local DSA chapter. So in that case, they got into electoral politics.
And had a candidate
run. And who won his election. But in our case, we don't focus on the electoral politics as much. We focus more on the issue stuff because we're still a fairly small chapter and still growing.
Mm-hmm. DSA is sometimes associated with what's left over of the Bernie Sanders campaign.
Sure.
Is this a group that was formed around Bernie Sanders or
no?
What is...
No, actually, we are. So we're Bernie is, to the best of my knowledge, not actually a dues-paying member of DSA. A lot of our members, though, were energized by his campaign because he was the first to take socialism from being kind of a scary Cold War boogeyman into a practical idea that you can do in American politics, and to say, look, it's not scary. It's actually something that has benefits for you and for me and for everyone.
And he identified himself as a socialist.
Yep. Yeah. And so before the election, we had 7,000 members. After Bernie's campaign and after Trump's election, we now have 32,000 members nationwide.
So you're a growing movement.
Yes, yeah, very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so talk for a minute about this word socialism. What is the definition in the context of this organization?
Well, that's a very good question. I my suspicion is that if you asked five different members, you'd get five different answers.
So what's yours?
So my definition would just be a more just and a more democratic way of organizing not only the economy but society in general. So ideas like workers having control over their businesses, to not have to do what the boss tells you just because they're the boss, to say that you do the work too and you should have some – you should have an equal say in how that work gets used and have an equal say in the profits that are made from that.
Mm-hmm. The word socialism implies that there is a primary focus on economics. Is that correct? That the analysis has an economic base at heart.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's, a lot of it goes back to I think a lot of DSA members would go back to, you know, Marx's analysis of class in society. But that necessarily affects everything in society. You know, it all comes back to economics, right? The healthcare system comes back to economics. There are corporations making a lot of money off of having privatized healthcare. And so even though that it's fundamentally an economic cause, the effect is felt far outside of just the economic sphere.
Mm-hmm. So am I understanding you that for you the word socialist is related to economics, but you're really talking about your vision of a more just world? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we believe that I think I could speak for most of the members of the chapter and probably a lot of the members of the organization when I say that more just world is fundamentally incompatible with a capitalist economic system. And so to get rid of capitalism, you necessarily have to reform society in general to create that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So relate this back to the tailgate project.
Yeah. Changing one brake light is not going to
create a just world. But
yeah,
what does it
but
mean?
It helps.
Why is it a signature project?
Sure. So this is a case where, you know, pulling people over for a busted taillight is commonly used by police as a pretext to pull over, particularly immigrants, people of color, marginalized groups. And we've seen, you know, through a lot of tragic recent events that those routine traffic stops can have really terrible results. And so we figure if we can help one person prevent that kind of terrible outcome for one person, we can help them with that. We can both help the community, and we can cut away in a very positive way at a rather racist policing tactic.
So it's a symbolic gesture against racial profiling.
That, and I mean, you know, it's probably not quite as symbolic for the people who were changing brake lights with. And another goal is just to build community solidarity, right? Because, I mean, you know, if you come to us and want your brake light fixed, you're a person. We're people helping people. We're not doing this with the expectation that you're paying us. We're just doing it because you came to us and we can help you, and so we will.
So it's a neighborly gesture.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, and, you know, a part of that just society is being neighborly and helping each other.
So a community with brake lights intact is a healthy community.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there people driving around Ames that need brake lights?
Like I said, that's a good question.
I guess you'll find out.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. I mean, this is kind of a trial. To the best of my knowledge, nobody's done this in a city the size of Ames. It's been in larger cities, but we got energized by seeing the results of our colleagues elsewhere and wanted to try it here. And we figure, we want to see how this goes. And if it goes really well, we'll take it on the road and in some of the other communities in our area.
Uh-huh. Well, I just was pointed out, a nice lady pointed out to me in a gas station outside of Duluth just last week that my brake light was out. So my brake light got fixed.
They should have waited. Could have come on by.
Should have waited. Tell us again where you can go to get your brake light replaced.
Sure. Brake lights will be replaced on Monday, January 15th. We'll be there between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. at the East Parking Deck on ISU campus. That's 500 Wallace Road. Look for the people in the red shirts.
And also, if you want to learn more about what democratic socialism is,
it's a good
place to find out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Heart of Iowa DSA, or contact us by email at heartofiowadsa@gmail.com.
Why don't you repeat those again?
Sure. We're Heart of Iowa DSA on Facebook and Twitter, and we're heartofiowadsa@gmail.com.
We're speaking with Tom Branshag from the Social Democrats of America. Tom, you live in Jewell?
Yeah, that's correct.
The people in this group, are they from all over Central Iowa?
A lot of them are from Ames. We have a few members from outside of the Ames area, from some of the other counties we cover. We're trying to do more recruitment to bring in people from more of the rural areas around Ames.
Well, maybe you'll have to go out and fix brake lights in towns outside of Ames next year, too.
Yeah, sure sounds like it.
Thank you so much for stopping by. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm right, and I could be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The preacher, the banker, the drummer, and then makes no difference what group I'm in.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, putting on my glasses. Mary Rankin is here, Director of Sustainability for Iowa State and the City of Ames. And you're here for your monthly check-in. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And the topic today is sustainability in business.
Yes.
It's a great topic. And especially something called the Smart Business Challenge.
That is correct. We started the Smart Business Challenge. Oh, gosh. I am thinking it's been – I am trying to remember. Our sesquicentennial year here at Ames is when we kicked off the Smart Business Challenge. And basically, the challenge revolves around the fact that we have so many businesses in our community doing a number of unique things and a diversity of things related to supporting sustainability for our community collectively, as well as certainly their businesses and their customers. And so we started the challenge both to honor the work of these businesses in Ames and also to provide a network so they could share ideas, share tips, and that we could also be readily available to connect them to resources that might assist them in furthering their sustainability efforts. And so we actually, this month, later in the month, are going to host a recognition event for our Smart Business Challenge participants. And the mayor, our new mayor, John Hala, will be there honoring them. And we thought it would be really interesting to bring a couple of them on the show this morning. And so with me, I have Eric Abrams. And Eric is the owner, co-owner, I guess.
Co-owner.
Okay,
yep.
Co-owner. Got to give your wife some credit here, right?
Yep.
Okay, co-owner of Duckworth Wearing and also The Loft. And Eric is... I'll give a little bit of background about the challenge in just a second, but Eric is our most recent recipient of a platinum certification for the Smart Business Challenge. And I also have with me Nadav Mayer, and he is co-owner.
Also co-owner,
again,
yes.
Give the wife some credit there for Morning Bell Coffee Roasters. And Nadav is with us because he is the most recent business to join the challenge. And so I thought that it would be a unique perspective from both of their accounts about sustainability in business and a little bit more about why they got involved in the challenge. But I might start by talking a little bit about the challenge. So as I mentioned, the challenge both honors and connects resources related to sustainability in the business community. And so the challenge is set up that there are basically three tiers of accomplishment that we evaluate businesses on, or you know, give them credit and do that honoring. There is a bronze tier, there is a silver tier, a gold tier, and then also there's a platinum tier. So there are actually four. The bronze tier is basically set up in recognition of businesses doing education and awareness based upon 10 different sections of sustainability. And the silver then looks at, have they implemented products or practices, procedures related to those 10 different areas. The gold looks at, are these actually policies or preferred standard operating procedures that they put into place? And then platinum is for something that completely just goes above and beyond any sort of expectations, is so particularly unique and has such a commitment related to sustainability.
Now, Eric, you're platinum?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sure,
all
sure
right.
Are.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I would mention these 10 different areas focus on all the facets of sustainability that we talk about on the show different times. It looks at economic, it looks at mm-hmm. environmental, and it looks at social. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so we've been very diligent to make sure that certainly, you know, we want to acknowledge what businesses are doing in areas such as lighting, energy mm-hmm. conservation, what type of equipment that they're using, water mm-hmm. conservation, indoor air quality, the outdoor environment, but also
transportation.
Transportation, mm-hmm. yes, definitely. Yeah. Waste is another
waste.
Area.
Mm-hmm. And also customer relations?
Right. So in the social realm of mm-hmm. sustainability, we look at things like customer relations. What unique things are being done for the customer related mm-hmm. to sustainability? And so those are things such as offering a discount if maybe they bring in their own coffee mug, if they bring in their own reusable bag, offering a reusable bag option, maybe offering unique opportunities related to receipts. Maybe paperless receipts or receipts that do not have certain chemicals in them that, you know, that are known to not be very effective and healthy.
Dangerous.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then we look at community relations. So how involved is the business in supporting the community, mm-hmm. in providing donations, in hosting events, in being a part of community events, offering maybe internships and those sorts of things. And so it's all of these pieces combined then mm-hmm. that the business will join. They'll do an energy audit, which allows them to have an idea of some areas they're doing really, really well in and maybe some areas they didn't even think of that they could just do little tweaks on that would be substantially impactful for their business.
Mary, did you put this together?
I put this together along with it actually started out as an Ames Chamber of Commerce, City of Ames, and Iowa State University effort. Mm-hmm. And the chamber was very interested in something for their businesses. And then over time, it's sort of gone over to be primarily overseen by the City of Ames. Mm-hmm. However, in my shared position, this is one of the things that I get to work on. And it's been very exciting because we've been able to include two student interns that also work on the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Big project. I mean, it's a lot of effort has gone into it. If you go to the City of Ames website, you can find a list of resources
yes.
that have been put together, which is very interesting to look at, and it connects to national programs for business and sustainability
Right. And that's one of the pieces of the challenge that we think is particularly unique for businesses, we hope is unique for businesses, is that we really have tried to go out and look at the gamut of different resources and tips that can be beneficial to them. And so any business can go on and, you know, look at the resources and certainly utilize them. They don't have to belong to the challenge, but we sure hope that businesses would join the challenge because we know that every single business in the city of Ames is doing something that supports sustainability, and we really want to celebrate that. And so it's exciting to have these two gentlemen with me. Yes.
So let's meet our guests.
All right. And so I wondered if each of you, probably our listeners are very familiar with your businesses, but maybe you could just give a little brief introduction of maybe how long your businesses have been in the city and, you know, the unique service you feel you provide and why you were interested in joining the challenge.
Oh, yeah. So I'm Eric Abrams at Duckworth and the Loft. So
you're on Main Street.
Main Street, both on Main Street. 232, let me see. I have the Ames prefixes here. 232 Main and 233 Main.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
Nice and easy. So the Loft, or Duckworth, started in the year 2000. Main intent of that was for local people to consign and recycle local children's goods. And so that's been pretty much a staple downtown since the year 2000. Then we opened the Loft in 2009 because we saw a need for our college, teen college, and adult communities to be able to have a chance to recycle their items. And not just that, make money on those items. And I've always been interested in efficiencies when it comes to, like, utility usage, bringing your utilities down. And, you know, what really got me started with efficiency was lighting. Over at the old loft building, we were changing out 8-foot fluorescent tubes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it was
awful. That's quite a significant change to be able to do.
We had 32 in the awning and about 40 inside the building. And I was changing those constantly. And so then we said, okay, it's taking me labor. We got to dispose of them. We had a special company come down to pick up those things. So then we decided to flop that building out to all LED lighting. And so we sourced that lighting from Innovative Lighting out of Roland to keep the money as
locally
as possible.
That hire economic
local electricians
piece.
To come in. And I tell you, cut utility bills about 70%.
Wow.
And so just on the lighting side of things. Wow. And so that's really what got us thinking and going was more the economic side of how can we bring down our costs, make some investment, bring down our costs, and save us some time. So,
and those, of course, you know, all of those changes that you're able to make transfer to the services and the additional services that you're able to provide to your customers. So it is a win-win on many, many, you know, instances, and most definitely for our community.
Yep.
That's great.
So what makes Eric a platinum member?
So, Eric, do you want to talk about your donation policy with your goods? Because
so
that's really what, you know, sort of struck Eric above and beyond.
So what we do is, as people consign clothes with us, we have kind of a saying internally within the store, if you're not done with relationship with your clothes, you shouldn't bring it in to consign, right? So you're ready to either make some, try to make a little bit of money on it and do something good by having somebody else buy it and wear it, or... But what happens is after about a 90-day period with that clothing, if it doesn't sell, what we do is we source that out to different charities here in town. Like most of my wife is here, but she knows all the different charities in town that we donate to. So they come and regularly pick up the items and then go take them to places in need. Mm-hmm. Our store in Ankeny, there's a high school program there called Take, and they come and grab the stuff from Duckworth Wearing Ankeny, and they take that to their they have a mission going out their church and or school, and they source that out there. So
ensuring that it gets to places that need them. Yes,
yeah, it gets used again. And then what happens there is if it's stuff that they can't find a home for, then they have a downstream. They go to usually textile recycling side of things. So then it goes to them, and then those things get turned into rags and stuff like that.
Sure, of course. And I thought it was also unique because you had mentioned when we were talking about your challenge and your checklist that oftentimes you will put things up for sale and the profits then come back toward a pool of funds that you use to support different events in the community.
Different events. So,
right.
You know, we support a lot of things on Main Street, Main Street Cultural District, do a lot of things with Iowa State. So they have a sustainability thing in the fall.
It's called National Campus Sustainability Day.
Yes, yes. And so we put a booth out there. We give money to those types of things. We support things like Trend Magazine and stuff like that at the university. So,
right.
Yep.
So So it was that not only commitment to really a zero waste print, but also just all of those give back opportunities. It would be really easy to say, oh, everything just go to textile recycling. Right. But they really put the extra effort into ensuring as much good can be given to the community as possible. And so mm-hmm. that's what really stuck out.
Yes.
for the platinum certification for the Loft and Duckworth Wearing. So it's very exciting. Congratulations.
Yep, it's great to be community-minded and community-focused.
Most definitely. Okay, so Nadav, tell us about Morning Bell Coffee Roasters.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And first, Mary, thanks for having me here.
Absolutely.
And also, Eric, congratulations. It's really nice.
Thank you.
The work that you've done for the community and that platinum certification is really enviable. But yeah, I'm Nadav Mayer from Morning Bell Coffee Roasters, and we have a specialty coffee roasting operation on Main Street, kind of toward the east end by Duff. And we have a coffee service there and serve coffee to the community. And the main focus, though, is our specialty coffee roasting and sourcing operation that we do. And I was invited to kind of think about this sustainability challenge by the current interns, Scott and Taylor, who are wonderful. And they reach out to
me. They do their job very well.
They do. And, you know, I felt like there was probably enough that we were doing sustainability-wise that it would be an interesting discussion to see what else is out there. What are some of the other low-hanging fruit that our business could try to do?
Right, most definitely. And I'll jump in because we just met, actually. We had a lovely discussion with Nadav, the interns, Taylor and Scott and I, just on Wednesday, mm-hmm. correct? Gosh, 2 days ago. And we started going through the checklist and some of the unique things you do. So highlight a couple of things that you're particularly proud of related to sustainability.
Sure. And I'd say, you know, for other businesses thinking about doing this, it's really a fun process. And it really is a way to step outside of your normal day-to-day operations and the normal way that you might view your business to sit down with people from the outside who know about this and see other businesses in town and what they do. And to maybe highlight some of the things you could do, but also see that maybe some of the things you're doing are different from mm-hmm. other businesses in town. So I think based on our discussion, some of the things that were interesting is that we do, you know, composting through our friend Bob, 100% of our organic waste that comes out of the coffee shop. And, you know, that's a fairly significant commitment, and both for Bob and for us. And Bob and his wife Dinah have a wonderful garden in South Ames, and they take and compost all our coffee grounds. And that's a really nice thing to be able to know that we're taking that out of the trash stream. And I feel like that's something different that maybe not all the businesses and Ames are able to do.
Absolutely. And there's always some organic waste, no matter what your business is, usually, that you have. And the piece I loved about Bob is you mentioned that Bob and his wife bring you flowers that then you put in your business as part of that experience the customers get to have in the atmosphere being there. And they bring you produce that you incorporate into some of the products that you
offer.
Yeah,
occasionally there'll be a cucumber from Bob around in the shop. And you know, but it's pretty nice to have that connection and that full circle feeling, you know, with the product that it can live on and actually help and not just go to the landfill into the resource recovery system that we heard a little bit about when we sat down,
right.
those kind of organic wastes gum up some of the works in our resource
right.
recovery system.
Organics do not assist the resource recovery system. So it's great to have that out of the waste stream, most definitely. And I love sort of the bartering, you know, atmosphere.
Yeah.
I think that that's sort of a lost art. And so it was lovely to hear about that.
Yeah, we love the connection with people in Ames. You know, we've been open a year and a half now on Main Street, and we just love the feeling of being enmeshed in the community and knowing so many people. And Ames is an amazingly wonderful place. The people here are amazing, and it's just so much fun to be able to connect with people here.
Yeah, absolutely. Another interesting piece that I noticed in Morning Bell, and of course there are many, as with Eric's checklist, but the support that you've given to artists in the community through, again, providing the decor and the atmosphere of your business, both with students and with local artists as well.
Yeah, we really try to have a good program where we have new art coming up in both of our galleries, kind of the main coffee shop space, and also in our hallway, and being able to encourage some artists that maybe haven't shown their art other places, and also faculty members and different folks who are more active in the arts community. And it's a great program. It's a lot of fun to have different art, and it's a benefit to us, too, because when you come in the shop, just to see the difference in terms of how it feels to have different art on the wall.
You have a different experience, yeah. Most definitely. And these are things, as we've talked about. Of course, there are ones that are really, really specific to the types of businesses that both Nadav and Eric have. But the things we've talked about are really transferable, you know, to any business. You can look at your waste stream. You can look at your lighting. And you can look at what you do with the products you're no longer able to use. And you can also look at just supporting, you know, the public in art and other pieces that really embrace the diversity of talent and that community feel that we have here as well. That's so wonderful. So why would you – I mean, you offered a little bit, but what would you say to a business that's sort of thinking, oh, I don't know, should I join the challenge? What would you guys say to them?
I would say, you know, the energy audit that you do is really great. Because that goes through and looks through, you know, how your heating and cooling systems are working, how you're using water, all that stuff. So that really gives you some targets, you know, to focus on. Mm-hmm. And small businesses downtown, especially, you know, looking at like the BPA free receipt paper, you know, stuff like that.
Right, right.
You know, I didn't realize that until we did the Smart Business Challenge. So we went ahead and reordered that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those types of things, you know, starting thinking about just things outside the box, like reusable bags, stuff like that.
Right, so, right. Yep. That's great. That's great.
Yeah, and I think, Eric, it's a great point about the energy audit. I don't know what it costs the program or costs the city when that gets billed, but I'm sure it's not free. And that's a direct benefit to a small
right.
business.
And it is a free service
yep.
to you.
And that's
right.
huge. So you think about how many times is the city going to come to a small business and say, hey, I'm going to spend hundreds of dollars. I'm sure it's
right.
at least hundreds of dollars to come and look at your business and bring a professional from Des Moines to work up your business and see where you're losing money.
Yep.
That's amazing. So even from a pure economic standpoint, this should be really low-hanging fruit for any business owner in Ames to just think about having just the energy audit part. And there were some interesting things that turned up for us. You know, it felt like for our building, things were pretty good, but there was some insulation that we could add different places and a blanket around our hot water heater and things that we hadn't thought about that would kind of bring it to the next level in terms of our, you know, sustainability, but also the energy efficiency and that economic picture.
Of course. And the whole idea with the audit is to help you see things that maybe aren't as visible on a day-to-day basis, right? Yeah. And just to offer different ideas, you get a nice electronic report with that through the challenge. We also asked the auditor to come back and have a sit-down discussion with the business owner. So that is an additional service that we try to offer as well. Any particular goals you guys have set forth for yourselves sustainability-wise because of the challenge?
Yeah, I got just we got over at the loft, you know, we really need to swap out our toilets for low flow. So that's one thing
yes,
we're going to be
yes.
looking at, trying to get to all email receipts. Our system does that. Most people get email receipts, but they still want paper. And the other one, being president of the Main Street Cultural District
yes,
this year.
Yes, congratulations.
So that gives me the ability. That's on my short list of going out and taking a month and promoting this across businesses downtown.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you, Eric. How about you, Nadav?
I think the goals that I'd have is just to communicate more in terms of what we do already. I think that's one of the things that the audit and
yes.
the sit down with the Morning Bell specifically, there might be all these amazing things that we do, you know, the paperless receipts and, you know, 100% compostable packaging and recycling all the organic waste. But we don't discuss that at all, either with our employees or with the public.
Right. You just do it, but you don't talk about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Right.
So finding ways that we can do that. And Eric, I think the work you're doing is also fabulous.
Well, and I would mention also that both Eric and Nadav are going to be at our event on January 25th. If there are businesses out there that are interested in the challenge, we sure encourage you to contact either myself or contact Electric Services and ask about being one of our attendees at the event. We would love to host you. We would love to offer more information. We'll have a number of organizations there that provide these different resources and expertise to our business challenge members. You can talk to them. We'll have a panel discussion of our platinum businesses to learn more about things. And the mayor will also give his vision related to sustainability in the business community. So please do not hesitate to contact me at mrankin@iastate.edu or 294-5055. Or the Electric Services Department at City of Ames. And for more information just generally on the Smart Business Challenge, you can go to the City of Ames website. Under Doing Business, there's the Smart Business Challenge, or you can just do a search for the Smart Business Challenge.
Mary Rankin, Director for Sustainability for Ames and Iowa State University, speaking with Eric Abrams from Duckworth Wearing and The Loft, and Dev Mayer, owner of Morning Bell Roasters. And they've also been speaking about the Smart Business Challenge program of the City of Ames to reduce the business's footprint through rebates, energy saving programs, and other resources. Thank you so much, all of you, for coming today. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. Earlier in the show, we also heard a roundup of this week's news by Dennis Hart, our intrepid civic reporter who keeps an eye on local news all the way from California. Dennis, you're missing all the snow. We also heard from Tom Brantzig from the Heart of Iowa Social Democrats of America, who will give you new taillights if you need them. Just go to the east parking lot deck at ISU at 500 Wallace Road, across from Hamilton Hall. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Everyday People by the one and only Sly and the Family Stone. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down and we'll train you to be part of the Local Talk team. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.